Anvichara-tanu-padha-vim brachi vatsalam. Translation. O sons of Daksha, please hear my words of instruction attentively. You're all very affectionate to your elder brothers, the Hariyashvas. Therefore, you should follow their path. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Narada Muni encouraged Vrijati Daksha's second group of sons by awakening their natural affinity for their brothers. He urged them to follow their older brothers if they were at all affectionate toward them. Family affection was very strong, and therefore Narada Muni followed this tactic of reminding them of their family relationship with the Hariyashvas. Generally, the word Nigama refers to the Vedas, but here Nigama refers to the instructions contained in the Vedas. Srimad Bhagavatam says, Nigama kalpataro ganitam palam. The Vedic instructions are like a tree on which Srimad Bhagavatam is the ripened fruit. Narada Muni is engaged in distributing this fruit, and therefore he instructed Vyasadeva to write this Mahapurana, Srimad Bhagavatam, for the benefit of ignorant human society. Anako Pashalam Saksha Bhakti Yoga Madhoksaje Lokasya Janato Vibhans Chakra Satvata Samhita, which means the material miseries of the living entity, which is superfluous to him, can be directly mitigated by the linking process of devotional service. But the mass of people do not know this, and therefore the learned Vyasadeva compiled this Vedic literature, which is in relation to the Supreme Truth. That's in the Bhagavad Gita 1:7. People are suffering because of ignorance and are following a wrong path for happiness. This is called anatta. These material activities will never make them happy. And therefore, Narada instructed yesterday to record the instructions of Srimad Bhagavatam. Vyasadeva actually followed Narada and did this. Srimad Bhagavatam is the supreme instruction of the Vedas. Ganitam Palam, the ripened fruit of the Vedas, is Srimad Bhagavatam. Excuse me.
Boon or earn the note. Boon.
I read the verse again in the second verse. The Chayana Samishnita Gadato Nigama Mama Anvicha Tanu Pada Bim Ratri Nam Ratri Vatsala. O sons of Daksha, please hear my words of instruction attentively. You're all very affectionate to your elder brothers, the Hariyashvas. Therefore, you should follow their path. Ma'am Vishnupadaya Vishnu, Vestad Vidavet, Timati Bhakti Vidavta, Sarvaniti Nane, Namaste Saraswati Deve, Gauravati Vacharya, Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Vasitya Vishnupadaya. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhupada, Shri Advaita Gadadha Shri Vasati Gaur Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Vajkapta Rubyasya Kripa Sindhu Vya Evja. Padhitana Bhavavibhyo Vaishnavibhyo Namo Namaha. Hare Krishna. So the two main points here, as presented by Srila Prabhupada, two main points. First of all, that Narada Muni, when he was preaching, he was very, you could say, strategic about it, tactical. He didn't just sit there like a machine and just sort of rattle things off, as we say in English, like a parrot. Actually, even if someone does repeat such instructions like a parrot, it's not that it's really bad, but it's just not as effective as using one's intelligence how to present these things in ways which will be effective. Yes. In other words, we should use our intelligence in Krishna consciousness. Krishna has given us maybe not that much intelligence, but whatever there is, we should use it. And therefore, just to, you know, sometimes you see these people in the street selling religious literature, and particularly I remember in London we'd see the, I think they're Jehovah's Witnesses, and they have some monthly or whatever magazine, and they just stand on the side of the road. I mean, the shop, you know, you've got the footpath, then the road, and you've got the footpath, and then you've got the shops. They just stand like with their backs to the shops, holding the thing up. Of course, if you want it, you can take it. If you don't, you're under no, you know, want to speak of pressure, but there's just no attempt to proactively interact with you. But Narada Muni didn't do that. Narada Muni was very proactive, intelligent, strategic, and presented Krishna consciousness, or even didn't exactly present at this point real Krishna consciousness. He's just beginning a process for introducing it. But he did it in a very intelligent way, so as to stimulate them, so that when they came to the point, or when he came to the point of saying, look, this is Krishna conscious, and this is not, and what you're doing is not, so therefore you should do something else, and now I'll explain what you should do. That's sort of like more direct form of Krishna consciousness. He's just leading them to the point where they're going to be ready when they hear that, to think, oh yes, okay, I should listen to this. Otherwise, you know, it's just done in a very bland and unintelligent way, then so many people will not feel stimulated. In fact, you know, anyway. So he did this, and this is part of preaching. Like we said, Krishna has given us some intelligence, and we should use it in Krishna's service. And particularly when we talk of Krishna's service, of course there are many services. There's deity worship, there's cooking, there's cleaning, organizing things, there's all sorts of things. But particularly in the movement of Lord Chaitanya, presenting Krishna consciousness to others, presenting the chanting of the holy names to others, is well, all the other activities are meant to really be assisting that. So Narada Muni, of course, he understood that it's natural these young men, Sadalashvas, they have some attachments to their older brothers. It's natural. That's there in family life. It's extremely predominant in family life. So understanding that, the way he presented things, or he's beginning to present things, is that, look, you know your older brothers. You know how they feel. You know what they did. And they mean a lot to you. So surely you should follow in their footsteps, isn't it? And the tendency will be, in many cases, to say, yeah, you're right. And we do this ourselves when we're preaching, when we're doing book distribution. There's a tactic in book distribution. Of course, anything can be misused, but there's a tactic, and it's a good one, that when people take a book, you write down their name and how much they gave. You make a list. And so that when the next person comes, you can show them, look, you know, so many people from around here have taken books, and this is how much they've given, so you should do it. And it stimulates you. You know, we had a problem once. I mean, anything can be misused. Even the best things, even the chanting of the holy names, in and of itself, can be misused. Chanting for material gain, or, you know, in different ways. Now, there was this devotee who was doing exactly that. But the thing was, if someone would give, for example, 5 rands, the local currency, it's sort of like maybe 10 or 15 rupees. So if someone would give 5 rands, he would add a zero. So such and such gave 50 rands. So one day, one Muslim, like, you know, staunch Muslim, he stopped him. And, you know, made a sort of proposal that we're doing charitable work. And one Muslim, the other Muslim, a few minutes before, a little before, had given 5 rands. And he'd added a zero. And he said, look, you know, the Muslims are also giving, you see. And here's the man's name. See, he gave 50 rands. And the man said, really? He's a close friend of mine. And right there on the street, he phoned the fellow. You gave 50 rands, did you? So it's a good thing, is it? And the man said, wait a minute. I didn't give 50 rands, I gave 5 rands. So then they called the police, they called the temple, and it became a sort of a minor scandal. But anyway, the point is, it's a simple point of strategy, that if even people who people don't know have done something, you can influence people to also do that by just showing them that, look, everyone's giving, you know, everyone's giving 5 rands, the last person gave 10. Give something. And then they tend to feel, oh, okay, they become more accepting. So, in this case, it's a very similar approach. That, look, you know, your brothers did this. Your older brothers. Of course, in Vedic society, older brother is a, you know, a higher position and kind of respectable position. Particularly the oldest brother. And the tendency will be, oh, really? He did that? Okay, I will do that. So that's the strategy of Narada Muni. his tactic, as Prabhupada says. And it's good. And we should use it. Because, I mean, we should use it nicely, not in a misleading way. But yes, we should use it. So then Radha goes on to a much more technical type of point, that in the verse, this is 6th canto, chapter 5, verse 30, that we're looking at, the word nigama is used, which is translated, well, it's gadata nigam, gadato nigama, mama, means, gadata, I'm speaking, nigama, instructions, mama, mine. You should accept my instructions. Nigama. But Prabhupada makes the point in the purport, and it's interesting. It's interesting. It is a bit on the technical side. That generally, Prabhupada says, generally the word nigama refers to the Vedas. But here, nigama refers to not just the Vedas, like a group of literatures, but the instructions, the specific instructions in the Vedas. And here he says, Dakshayana, O sons of Daksha, son Srinuta, please listen attentively, Nigama Mama, to my instructions. In a little technical sense, it is interesting that this is Srimad Bhagavatam. And some people who are very into the Vedas and things which are Vedic feel that the Srimad Bhagavatam and the Puranas and the Itihasas, like Mahabharata, which includes Bhagavad Gita, that they're not really Vedic. They're like post-Vedic, following in the footsteps of the four Vedas, but not in the classic sense exactly Vedic. This is particularly what they call Arya Samaj. I imagine you have them in Maurice. Reunion, I don't know. Less likely, but it could be. You've heard of Arya Samaj? Well, they're more North Indian, of course. Anyway, whatever. So, but here you must have Arya Samaj, isn't it? And they're into the Vedas. They're into, and the Vedas means the four Vedas. Rig, Sava, Yajur, and the Tarava Vedas, specifically. And those four Vedas prescribe fire sacrifice. As a result, the Arya Samaj are very into fire sacrifice. And if you go to one of their centers, we don't normally, I haven't been out there for so many years, gosh, really many years. But you'll find, in many cases, there is the Yajna Havan Kund, sort of permanently there, and they may use it every day. Some places they do. So, but now Narayana is saying that Gadato Nigama Mama, listen to my instructions, Nigama, specifically instructions, at which I hear in Srimad Bhagavatam. So he's using the word Nigama specifically in the context of Srimad Bhagavatam, which means Srimad Bhagavatam is Vedic. Narada Muni is a great, great authority, way beyond Swami Dayanand. You heard of Swami Dayanand? He's the man from the Arya Samaj. He's the founder, as I recall. Swami Dayanand says, that only the four Vedas are Vedic. And when he says that, he means if you know anything about the structure of Vedic literature, the Samhita sections, the other sections of the four Vedas, the Brahmanas, Aranyakas, and Upanishads, he also takes to be non-Vedic in the strict sense of the term. They're like supplementary, not actually Vedic. So, but Narada Muni, who's way more authoritative than Swami Dayananda, he's saying here, these instructions I'm giving to you right now, which are not exactly part of the four Vedas, they're something else. This is Nigama.
No, it's okay.
This is Nigama. It's like very authoritative Vedic instruction. And then Prabhupada goes on to elaborate on the position of Srimad Bhagavatam. He quotes, what's the verse? I forget actually, but it's right at the beginning. It's in the first chapter. Nigama kalpa taror galitam palam. Nigama kalpa taror. In a kalpa taru, which according to, a little bit of Sandhi, the way the endings of words change, according to different grammatical arrangements, kalpa taru becomes kalpa taror. So, Srimad Bhagavatam is Nigama kalpa taror. The wish fulfilling, the fruit, palam, the fruit of the Nigama kalpa taror. The tree, the wish. Well, kalpa means tree, and taru means fulfills desires. Well, no, kalpa means tree. Anyway, kalpa taru, kalpa vriksha. Kalpa means desire, and taru or vriksha means tree. So, Srimad Bhagavatam is Nigama Kalpa Taror Galita Palam, the ripened fruit of that Kalpa Taru, that wish fulfilling tree of Nigama, Vedic instruction. And this is Narada Muni speaking, so it's very authoritative. Sometimes, we use this term more than Kalpa Taru, we use the term Kalpa Vriksha. I'm sure you've heard. In Vrindavan, all the trees are kalpa vriksha. They're wish fulfilling trees. But sometimes devotees say they're kalpa vriksha trees, which if you translate it means wish fulfilling trees. I mean, grammatical thing. Wish fulfilling trees. Because vriksha means trees. Kalpa vriksha trees means wish fulfilling trees. Anyway. So Nigama kalpa taror galitam palam, Srimad Bhagavatam is described right in the beginning as the phalam, the fruit, ripened fruit, of that wish fulfilling tree. Means the best, the topmost. Just like Prabhupada would say, when you've got mangoes, then the mango tree, obviously it's got sides, and the sun is coming from one side in the morning, and later on it moves, and then the other side is exposed to the sun. So, the sun is what really enhances the mango, any fruits which are not exposed to the sun, like, you know, they grow vegetables in greenhouses, glass houses, and they just don't taste the same. I mean, you know, it's better than nothing, but they definitely don't taste the same as really naturally produced vegetables, because they're not exposed to the sun. They're also not exposed to the moon. Yeah. So, but the fruit, in the case of a tree, the fruit which is right on the top, then it's exposed to the sun and the moon all the time, except right during the night. But otherwise, during the daylight hours, the fruit on the top is exposed to the sun, and at night to the moon, or when the moon's in the sky. So it's really getting empowered. So that fruit is the best fruit, the most tasty and full of vitality and so on like that. So Srila Bhagavatam is in the same position. The Vedic literatures are like a tree. But the Bhagavatam is like that, the ripened fruit on top of the tree, which is just getting exposed to and just absorbing the nectar of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, Vyasadeva compiled Srimad Bhagavatam for the people in general. As, of course, the chanting of the holy names is there, which is the main thing, is so important. But even if people chant the holy names, but they don't read Srimad Bhagavatam, at least it'll be much more difficult. At least. Even if they're chanting and really trying to chant nicely, without reading Srimad Bhagavatam, it will definitely be very much more difficult. Not impossible, but very much more difficult. Therefore we see at the end of Madhya Lila, Chaitanya Charitamrita, it's in the last, not exactly the last verse, but the last several verses, few verses. Srila Prabhupada makes the point, well, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, the author, has been saying how wonderful are the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya and of Lord Krishna and the Bhagavatam and all this. And in that context, Prabhupada says that, yes, we have produced all of our books, particularly Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, Nectar of Devotion, he mentions these four. And he says that any member of ISKCON who does not read all these books, in due course will end up eating and sleeping and falling down from Krishna consciousness, even if they're members already of ISKCON. So of course the foundation really is the chanting of the holy names. But studying Srimad Bhagavatam is also really vital part, particularly if one wants to progress very positively. Reading Srimad Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, etc., they are very essential, actually, for one's progress. Yes, so Srimad Bhagavatam then, Narad Muni is going to preach to them just a couple of verses, and you'll see. Anyway, we'll read tomorrow on the Women of the Temple tomorrow. Okay, so anyway, at some point we'll carry on and read what Narada Muni actually said. Not just this sort of, you know, trying to stimulate them that, look, your brothers did it, so you should also do it. But actually what he said, how he preached Krishna consciousness to them. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki. Welcome to Sundarlal Prabhu. Sundarlal Maharaj. He just carries on nicely. Okay, any comments or questions? Yes?
In the beginning of the verse, you mentioning about how the Narada has practically, in a way, preaches to Maharaja.
Yes. Yes. That's there. I mean, Prabhupada did say that sort of thing to some degree. But the thing is that, like, for example, if we read Bhagavad Gita chapter 10, verse 10 and 11, they're both very, very significant verses. And well known and just important. In there, Krishna's saying that, like 10:10, to those who are constantly devoted to serving me with love, I give the understanding by which they come to me. So in the purport, Prabhupada says, Prabhupada makes the point that even if a person is either not intelligent enough, well, he actually says not intelligent enough, or, you know, we could expand perhaps, just not in a position to take advantage, in a nice sense, of the literatures. Maybe they don't have the literatures available to them if they're geographically isolated. Or maybe they don't understand the local language or something. Or they're illiterate. You know, in the Western world, it's unusual to find someone who's illiterate. But in, you know, particularly third world, you find people who are illiterate. And there are even languages which we have not yet the books haven't been translated into. So, you know, if you're in that sort of situation, or, Prabhupada says, not able to take advantage of the instructions of the spiritual master, then still Krishna will give understanding through the heart. And Prabhupada makes the point that therefore a sincere devotee will never be without knowledge. So yes, you know, you can just go out and just start sort of flapping your mouth. And if you're sincere, Krishna will put some things there. But you know, like we said, we have to use the facilities Krishna has given us. We have to engage our bodies. We have to engage our minds. We have to engage our intelligence. As you know, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that someone who reads the sacred conversation of mine worships me with his intelligence. So it's not like it is against Krishna consciousness to use one's intelligence how to do anything in Krishna consciousness, and in this case particularly present it to people, you know, who have their different mindsets and understandings of life and attachments and all that. So, you know, at the very least, people should go out and preach devotees. And Krishna will help. But if devotees can be trained in how to preach, and even specifically in this case, how to give classes, there are strategies for doing classes that can really help. You know, otherwise you could say everybody, when they give a class, they shouldn't read the verse before. They should just sit down, open the book, and just go for it. When a person is experienced enough, they can do that. And even maybe sometimes people are not experienced. But as a general rule, we encourage devotees to prepare their classes. So it's systematic. So it is addressing the subject matter. So they're bringing in related points, you know, to sort of embellish or just add depth to the presentation. Yeah. And even now, there in some places, they do not let devotees go out and distribute books or preach to people unless the devotees have been through some program of training. Because, you know, it has happened that some devotees have just presented in the name of Krishna consciousness something which is just not Krishna consciousness. You know, I heard one boy once. He's a disciple of Prabhupada, and he's still a disciple of Prabhupada. But I heard him in our temple in Berry Place, London, as a new devotee. I heard him preaching to a guest about the four modes of material nature. It's just not right. And it will confuse people. I mean, that's, yeah. So, that's what I would say. Yes.
Maharaj, this Vedashtra Lamadurla Lamadurla, so, because they have three kinds of Vedas, and the Bhagavatam is the cream of the and it's mentioned also in the Uddha Purana that the Bhagavatam is the actual commentary of the Vedanta Sutra. So we understand Bhagavatam is the claim. And my question would be, we understand 5,000 years ago. So then what was the claim before that?
Well, Bhagavatam was existing before that. It's not like it was non-existent. At the end of Dwapara Yuga, the Vedas became lost or sort of severely corrupted. It's explained in Tapsadana by the curse of Gotama. Knowledge became ignorance. Therefore, Vyasadeva appeared to reconstitute, really, and rearrange the Vedic literatures. But the Bhagavatam, before that, before the corruption of the Vedic literatures by the curse of Gotama, the Bhagavatam was there. But there was one Veda. It was just called the Veda. Or the Yajur Veda. It wasn't the division of four Vedas. That was done by Vyasadeva. So the Bhagavatam was there in it. Bhagavatam was there. But not so much like specifically delineated as a unit. as it is now with Srimad Bhagavatam. Yeah. So it's not like the Bhagavatam just came into existence 5,000 years ago. Narada came because Vyasadeva thought he had completed everything with the Vedanta Sutra. But then Narada came and said, no, there's still more, the Bhagavatam. Because Narada knows, you know, he's been around a long time, he knows what are the Vedic literatures, and he knows about Srimad Bhagavatam. So Vyasadeva's compilation to that point had not been a complete compilation of the actual texts which had existed before. Vyas means divider. Veda Vyas means the divider of the Veda. Yeah. So he divided the Veda. But you know, it's part of the pastime. In order to enhance the whole thing, because Vyas, particularly this Vyas of 5,000 years ago, you know, oftentimes Vyas is a jiva who's empowered, so he's a Shaktivesh avatar, but a jiva. At least Jiva Goswami and Tapasandhava makes the point and gives at least one or two quotations to establish it, that this Vyas is actually the Lord. The previous Vyas was Parashara. In the previous, you know, Dwapara, end of Dwapara Yuga, before, was Parashara Muni. But now he quotes, I forget exactly what we'd have to look, that this Vyas now is Sakshat Narayan, directly Lord Narayan. So you know, Sakshat Narayan, he doesn't become confused and forget the most important thing. It's a pastime of the Lord's to facilitate bringing out this essential matter. Just like Arjuna is one of the greatest pure devotees, eternal associate, and such people don't become confused about whether we should serve, do what Krishna says or not. No, they just don't. But it's presented in that way just to bring it out, to emphasize, so that people will, it'll be easier for people to relate to. So same with Narada coming and preaching to Vyas. It's not really that Vyas needs to be preached to, but by the arrangement of the Lord, he became a little illusioned to think that, okay, the Vedanta Sutra, we've done it now. I mean, that is some confusion, actually, to think that the Vedanta Sutra is it. So Narada came and preached and brought out many important points so that people, when they read Srimad Bhagavatam, it'll be clearer to them, oh yes, actually the Srimad Bhagavatam has a really unique position. Is that okay? Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.